Camden Town,
Holborn,
Regent's Park,
West Hampstead,
Gospel Oak, Swiss Cottage,
Kentish Town,
Bloomsbury, Highgate,
St Pancras,
Covent Garden, King's Cross,
Somers Town,
Fortune Green, Camden Community Radio.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.
I'm Sarah O'Brien. In this month's update, I asked two Islington councillors and the chair and secretary of the Mount Pleasant Association why the Royal Mail Group's Mount Pleasant development plan does not benefit Camden or London's community.
What that then does, it then opens the door to a future developer coming in and screwing even more out of the local communities.
Freddie Chick interviews residents from the Regent's Park Estate and Hampstead Road area who are set to be moved from their homes to make way for HS2.
And with the train running through it, that's our football being affected. Not even ours, just young people in the community who use that pitch.
Yeah.
Because we've been playing there all our lives.
Former 1960s band member Colin Bluntstone talks music, Camden and fame with CC Radio's Anne Carroll.
Usually I come here to the Jazz Cafe and it's a very vibrant area.
The Royal Mail Group have put forward a development proposal to convert what are currently unused car parks at their Mount Pleasant sorting office. This site is nestled in between Clerkenwell, Bloomsbury, King's Cross and Hatton Gardens, in an inner London prime location. An ideal opportunity to redevelop a now underused site to create more housing, commercial properties leading to employment and an exciting green community space. But both Islington and Camden Council, the boroughs the site belongs to, have objected strongly to the Mount Pleasant development, as well as many other community and resident groups in the area. I spoke to councillors from Islington.
My name is Raphael Andrews. I'm a councillor with Islington Council. I represent the ward of Clerkenwell.
And my name is James Murray, and I'm the councillor in Islington with responsibility for housing and development.
And the Mount Pleasant Association.
My name's Edward Dennison. I'm an independent consultant specialising in the built environment, and I'm secretary of the Mount Pleasant Association.
My name is Mike Franks, I'm an architect planner and I'm the chairman of the association.
About why they object to these development plans.
We have a planning policy in Islington, as they do in Camden, which says that 50% of new housing has to be affordable. And Royal Mail came forward with the development that proposed 12% affordable housing. You know, we have a housing crisis in London and we desperately need to do something about affordable housing. So for such a huge site like this to be wasted by offering such a paltry amount of affordable housing, it is an outrage. And I think we were right to reject very strongly because we had a solid viability report that was done by both councils for the site, which showed very clearly that Royal Mail could provide at least 50% affordable housing on the site.
Even the residents who live around the area said, we don't want this kind of development in our area. We want it to be a mixed development, a mixed community, and we want people who live there to be part of our community. We don't want them to feel like if they're an island on their own. If you're going to have a development of this size, then you have to think about what the impact it's going to have on the local community. And Royal Mail have just not considered that at all.
There was an instinctive reaction against two main issues. One is the built-up block form of the buildings that were put towards us, and the other was the way in which they were put towards us and the fact that when we made comment, it wasn't listened to. So there was a growing anger and a growing dissatisfaction, and, for instance, in the area worst hit by the way the Victorians developed the new roads of Rosebery Avenue and Clerkenwell Road and Farringdon Road, left areas that didn't quite work. They were difficult areas, and in those areas the Royal Mail have proposed the worst possible development, 15-storey buildings, which really outraged people.
15-storey buildings right adjacent to a primary school which the architects didn't even know existed. And then taking precedence like the Holiday Inn building, which is completely out of character with the area, and it's defined as being out of character in the planning brief. And they've taken those as precedence to put even higher buildings right next to them. So this scheme was built up like a fortress.
But their development and regeneration statement of April 2013 claims to have consulted stakeholders and public community, citing yourself.
And of
Has
course,
that happened
or not? Yeah. Well, when you consult somebody, It implies that you will hear what they say and take it into consideration. We haven't noticed any consideration
so
of anything.
No meaningful engagement.
Well,
no,
exactly.
Not really.
It depends how you define consultation. You hold an exhibition or you do a mail drop, and then you can cite the fact that you've consulted 6,000 residents. But if you drop a letter through their letterbox and claim that that's consultation, that's your version of consultation. What we mean, as you've described, is meaningful participation. Participation where they listen to our views, they take them on board, and we hope that they would improve the development.
The development has now been called in by Mayor Boris Johnson, meaning he now overrides the democratic council process and will have the final say about whether the development plans get approved. Mayor Johnson claims that the site is of strategic importance and therefore he has stepped in to expedite the process. There currently are no contracts in place to build the development, so it is highly likely further planning permission will be sought once the site is sold. I asked both councillors, as well as Edward and Mike from the Mount Pleasant Association, why stopping Mayor Johnson from approving this stage of planning proposal was so important.
This is not about getting his homes built any quicker. It's actually about helping Royal Mail to make more money when they're selling it on. Now, you can start by saying, what on earth is Royal Mail doing behaving this way? And more to the point, what on earth is Boris Johnson doing being complicit with them in behaving this way? But even if he gives planning permission, what that then does, it then opens the door to a future developer coming in and screwing even more out of the local community. So if he waves it through with 12% affordable housing, what's to say a developer won't come back in a couple of years when the finances have changed and when the national government, if it's still conservative, has liberalised planning law even more and say, well, we don't want to do 12%, we can only afford 8%. So you can see how you can constantly inch back on. And also, if they approve a planning application with certain heights and different sort of building forms and different public access and so on, that sets a precedent for what comes next. So once you've opened that door to a development like this, it's very hard to close it again.
We've been played for a sucker by the process of putting up exhibitions and pretending to talk to us, when in fact there has been an underlying strategy that when it came to understanding how much affordable housing, there was a deliberate stepping back from giving information. And then, lo and behold, 6 months before Royal Mail went to Boris Johnson and said, we think the whole thing is not speeding up enough, what was previously on the table of 20% went down to 12%, which obviously both the boroughs couldn't accommodate because they knew that this was a game. So they went to Boris and said, things are slowing down and now they'll bring the affordable up from 12% to 20 or 25 as if it's a real concession and come out looking shining.
So this is a great game and the purpose of it is to realise the value of the site. When that site, the value is realised, it'll then be presented to a developer who will change it all again anyway. So all of this money has been wasted in just making sure that the Royal Mail can assure, that can guarantee the asset value, probably around £500 million, for a piece of land that the public gave to them last October, almost for free.
We hope Boris is going to listen, but we hope people will actually tell him not to let them do this and to find ways to make them talk to us. We should be partners with them. We are the new kind of community organisation, mature structure, with the backing of law and the neighbourhood structure to provide the plan. We should have our feet under the table, talking reasonably and in a dialogue which creates something valuable with the people who are going to do this.
How can people become involved in this process?
We have a very active website. Yeah, we have which has all the rejection or many rejections that people put forward against the planning application that was put to Camden and Islington last June. And we would call on them again to look at the revisions that have been published, and the consultation period now is running until the 27th of June, so we'd ask them again to write, to this time to the GLA, not to Camden and Islington. We just hope that as many people as possible pick up their pen or keyboard and write to the GLA, phone them and lodge their concerns and complaints and ask for this to be rejected by the mayor.
But just for clarity, this is now open to anybody as a public consultation,
yep, absolutely.
And not just anyone within the boroughs.
No, absolutely, anybody, yeah.
Stakeholders, interested parties, anybody, they have a chance and they write what they think is right and they just say it. They don't have to make it complex or technical.
This is a site of strategic importance, which is why it's been called in. They're one of the reasons for it being called in. So it affects Londoners, not just the local community.
In order to have your say about the Mount Pleasant development application, write or email to Samantha Wells, Development and Projects, Greater London Authority, City Hall, The Queen's Walk, London, SE1 2AA, or email samantha.wells@london.gov.uk by the 27th of June. To find out more about both Camden and Islington's objections to the plans, visit the borough's planning application webpages. To find out more about the Mount Pleasant Association, visit www.mountpleasantforum.wordpress.com or follow them on Twitter at Mount Pleasant Forum. All links mentioned will be posted online with this podcast. It is now seemingly inevitable that the HS2 project will go ahead. Its impact on Camden will be widespread and long-lasting. The Regent's Park Estate and Hampstead Road area will suffer more than anywhere else in the borough. 168 council homes will be demolished to allow for the expansion to Euston Station and to the railway line leading into it. The vast majority of demolition along the whole route to Birmingham is here. Residents and businesses are already leaving in anticipation of the chaos to come. Freddie Chick went to hear what people in the area are saying.
When it comes down to it, there is one area of Camden that will be affected far more seriously and immediately by HS2 than anywhere else. Almost all of the homes, streets and businesses that will be demolished to make way for the project are in the Regent's Park Estate and Hampstead Road area. No longer believing it can be stopped, people in this area have begun to treat it as a cold hard fact. Families are moving out of the flats set for demolition under the current plans, businesses along the Hampstead Road are leaving or not renewing their leases. This must be just the thin edge of a wedge that will see 168 council flats disappear and an estimated 3,000 jobs go. To hear a little of what local people are thinking and feeling, I went along to the Bengali Workers Association building one evening. I met Jay, Amaj, Rahil and Pubil, four young men from the area. They have family and friends who will have to move, football pitches they use that will go, lots they know that will disappear. So the council have been around and shown you what's going to happen. I mean, have you felt like anyone ever come and asked you, or maybe like other kind of, I don't know, your family or anyone, like what their opinion is?
I mean, it's just all talk. So all you hear is that's going to be knocked down and it's going ahead. So you can't do much about it if it's been decided. I mean, there's not much you could do. You could petition all you want, but at the end of the day, if they want to do it, they're going to do it.
Yeah, regardless of what you say, no matter what, they will go with it. It's what they have set, they will do it.
But that makes no sense, because if it's the government, then it's the people's choice.
Yeah, but the government...
But the government done it without asking.
Or petitioning anything.
Exactly. No referendum on the issue, no...
We spoke about what benefit HS2 was intended to bring to the country and how much it would cost.
They could spend that far better.
On education.
You said 35 billion.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Look at the homeless people. There was something where if police see a homeless person, they'll get arrested for it. They could use that money to house homeless people.
They could improve housing situations.
They could just improve the area in general.
NHS,
they don't need to.
UCH is facing cuts.
If they really need to get to Birmingham, I'd say like improve the lines, I guess, you know,
exactly.
Improve delays, put more trains out
put
there.
Put better trains on the current lines.
If they do build a track, they should redevelop the whole area. Because what's the point of having a flashy track next to a council estate with rats running around there
exactly,
everywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't be.
The estates won't be up to scratch looking at.
There's high end places right now. If you go down the street, you'll see there's nice houses.
Go down Regent's Park.
It's like
Park Village East is like the city, and then the council estate surrounding it is like favelas.
So that's a fair point. What they could give this area what like a few million pounds if they're going to spend £32 billion.
Yeah, give them more. They should give more to done. Like we have a local football pitch right in front of Escada actually where. And with the train running through it, that's our football being affected. Not even ours, just young people in the community who use that pitch.
Because
we've been playing there all our lives, so we know what's been going through that area, who's been coming and going, and how it's affected us.
Included in the list of things HS2 will bulldoze is a bike project two of these young men set up in 2009. It helps fix bikes for the local community and offers people the chance to come down and gain skills and accreditation. It has flourished and has grown into a social enterprise for not just the Regent's Park Estate, but the whole of Camden. Sadly, it will be swept away with the rest. Leaving the Bengali Workers Association, I walked down Hampstead Road to the row of Indian restaurants, pubs and cafes on Drummond Street. The expanded Euston station will turn Drummond Street into a dead end, killing off all passing trade and leaving business owners in little doubt of what the effect of HS2 will be. I spoke to the owner of the Drummond Villa, Mr. Hussain.
Do you think your restaurant will close? Or?
I think the restaurant will be closed because customers not coming. They build up the underground, they're working people, hugging people, restaurant will be open. It's impossible. There are a lot of restaurants here, maybe 200-300 people work here. If you have them make HS2 to underground, the people lost that job. This is very effect from the children, my family, everybody.
Yeah.
It is very effect for everybody.
And has anyone? Are you going to get any compensation? Has anyone talked to you about that?
Yeah, they will talk. I think somebody, but nobody will get a compensation. Nobody will get it. No, none of them.
Yeah, the council. How have you found that the council have been helping you on your side?
Council helping your side, but they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything. Nothing to do.
Do you think it's over? Do you think it's definitely going to happen?
I know it's going to happen, I know, I understand, but still we are camping about this.
Yes.
We are camping, yeah.
So you think there's still hope?
I think so, but I'm not sure. I think so, there is still hope.
If HS2 is inevitably going to happen, there is still hope, as Mr. Hussain has said, that something will be done to help those affected by it. There is hope as well that someone at HS2 Limited or in the government will pay attention to Jay, Amaj, Rahil, and Pubil's polite suggestion that if you are going to bulldoze family homes and community spaces and projects, and you do have billions of pounds to spend, you could at least promise to put right what you put wrong. But HS2 Limited and the government haven't shown any signs of listening to them so far.
Earlier this month, Camden Community Radio caught up with a singer who's been described as having one of the greatest British vocal sounds, by no less an expert than Sir Tim Rice. His voice was characterised as breathy, ethereal and operatic by the music journal Billboard. He was the lead singer in The Zombies, the 60s band famous for She's Not There and The Time of the Season, and went on to solo success with, among other songs, I Don't Believe in Miracles. Colin Bluntstone came to Camden with his band. He spoke to our reporter Anne Carroll.
It's soundcheck time at the Jazz Cafe, and tonight it hosts a set by Colin Bluntstone, who first found fame still as a teenager in the 1960s band The Zombies, and now, some decades on, is touring, performing, he's writing and recording with a voice that is as pure and tender as ever. We're in Camden. Welcome to Camden. We're part of Camden Radio here. It's been such a wonderful borough for finding music always. Do you enjoy playing in Camden?
I do, very much. Usually I come here to the Jazz Cafe, and it's a very vibrant area, and it's a very exciting area, you know, so it's always, it's a bit of a thrill, really. I'm a bit of a country boy, I think, and it's always a bit of a thrill, so come to the big city.
Oh, come on. But you are responsible for some of the most truly iconic songs with The Zombies and as a solo artist. Who's going to be up on stage with you tonight, and what's your menu, what's your playlist?
Well, I mean, we like to give a fairly good idea of what I've been doing for the last 50 years I've been recording. So we'll be playing songs from 1964 all the way through to the most recent album, On the Air Tonight. But I do try and concentrate on my solo career. We'll only play two Zombie tunes. I've got some wonderful players with me. Actually, two guys who play with The Zombies are Steve Rodford on drums and Tom Toomey on guitar. And then I'm Pete Billington on keyboards and Elliot Mason on bass. They're all wonderful players.
You've said 50 years in the business. I believe you started at 17. And you're singing, you're recording, you're writing, your voice is even more powerful than it ever was. What keeps you going? What makes you do it?
Well, I've often asked myself that. I think it kind of gets in your blood, really. I think I'm so surprised to find myself doing this at this time in my life. I just want to really enjoy it, and I want to keep going for as long as I can. And singing's quite a physical thing. And I realise that chances are I won't be able to do it forever. So I want to really enjoy it for as long as I can.
This tour is coming to an end.
Yes.
What do you have planned for after this tour?
Well, I've been on the road from first week of February until now. So I think I'm going to sleep and read quite a lot. I'll probably watch some football because the World Cup's coming up. So I'll watch some football. But I think I'm going to take it easy. Ideally, we, with the Zombies and with the solo band, we want to get into a writing and recording phase now. And the Zombies album will be first. We've started. We've done two tracks for a Zombies album. And I think it's going to be quite light in the second half of the year as far as live performances are concerned, while we get some recording done.
Is there anybody around now who you particularly admire, who you maybe even like to work with?
I'm not a great fan of working with other people. I think I've got a bit set in my ways, really, and I'm used to working with the people that I work with. But I suppose the people I admire are people that have been around a long time. People like Elton and Sting, thinking back to, well, McCartney, all the greats. I admire them because they've been so successful for such a long time and they haven't let those standards dip at all. And I think that's the proof of someone who is truly a great performer.
Well, that's you as well then, isn't it? Because your performance is absolutely perfect. The voice is, it's still very lyrical, it's tender, it's powerful. And I was listening to one of the songs off the most recent album, The Best Is Yet to Come, and it is so powerful, but it starts with that trademark gentle whispery and it builds. Yeah. It's just super. You're certainly doing that.
Well, thanks very much. I think it's best that you don't judge yourself, really. I think it's best that you allow other people to judge your work. And I think I operate on a slightly lower level than the people I've mentioned. I mean, they're a stadium arena bands, you know. But I'm very happy with my position in the business, and very, very, all of us, certainly in the Zombies, are so thrilled that we can still play around the world at wonderful venues at this time in our lives. It's totally unexpected, which makes it even more exciting, really. None of us were expecting to be playing live at this time in our careers.
A longer version of that interview is available on this site. For more information about his projects, you can go to www.colinbluntstone.co.uk, and he's also on Facebook.
If you have any local news or a news story you think should be heard, get in contact newsdesk@ccradio.org.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.